Hello, this is the Dot Matrix, and I am Sean.
I'm Justin.
And you're joining us on our 25th episode, May 30th, 2009. I almost said, I was thinking five for some reason, but still stuck on that year, maybe.
Well, you're being quite bold and actually saying the exact date in which we're recording this in case we don't get this posted for like 2 weeks.
Well, I was looking back too, and I noticed our last one was a month and 3 days ago, so.
Wow.
Even though we posted it probably a month and 1 day ago, we were pretty fast.
Yeah, we were pretty quick.
Yeah.
And it got cut off, right? I don't know if you've noticed, but I've had some real difficulty with the Bill Moyers podcast the last like 3 or 4 episodes. They've all been cut off.
Yeah.
And then they reposted them with the full, it's what looks like the full time, and then I delete them, and then I re-download them.
Yeah.
And then they're still cut off at the same point, so I don't know what's going on, but maybe everyone in the whole iTunes world has been having some difficulties with podcasts lately.
And that's where you and I get them. I know I do.
Yeah.
That we subscribe, so they just come in our podcast inbox.
Which everyone else who's listening to this podcast should be doing.
Yes. We're under life and culture or something? Is that the category?
Something like that.
Yeah. But, well, it's interesting because, you know, I noticed the same, I'm sure you heard this too. I listened to one where the first 2 minutes was like, beep.
And yes,
I was like,
yeah, yeah.
I thought, oh man, it's my iPod. Because, you know, sometimes iPods, you have to restore them or reboot them or whatever.
Right.
And then I did what you did. I re-downloaded. No, same thing. But when you reported ours being cut off short, I was like, oh, is that a coincidence or what, you know?
Yeah.
And sure enough, I actually hadn't downloaded our own off iTunes, but I just listened to it on our own site.
Yeah.
Dotmatrix.com. The dotmatrix.com, rather. And sure enough, it looks like it's all there, but then it was actually like 10 or 11 minutes short. And so I went back in and... It was, you know, you send the file to the podcast host site and it went up on my end and I reposted, FTP'd it. And sure enough, it went again. But this time it actually stuck. So I think it was probably just a glitch. But
yeah,
that's what happens with technology. You just got to test it, I guess. But all is well. Our 24th episode is up there in full. And I was listening to it. It was a good one.
Nice. Not biased in any way, of course.
No, not at all.
So 25th episode, quarter century of podcast. That's kind of really bad. 25th anniversary or whatever. I don't know what's 25 that isn't like in a year or date or
how. Yeah.
But anyways, it's 25. So it's been quite a lot. That's good.
It's good. In a year and a half, we did that. We started in November 07,
yeah.
And here we are in May 09. See, I had to think about that. I don't know. 09, it's like a weird number. Like
it is.
When we get to 2010, it will just come to us and mean like 2010, 2010.
You know? Right. Well, there's lots going on in the world, and we wanted to talk about a few things that are more local. Actually, this is a very local, at least provincial podcast. We've got ideas. There's things like, what, Bush and Clinton were in Toronto at some, did you see that?
Yeah, a little bit.
They were in Toronto, and Frank McKenna was like, who's the...
Frank McKenna?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he was the moderator of that. Oh. Like, just because you're a former United Nations ambassador and you know, former premier of New Brunswick doesn't mean you're a good moderator. Like, I don't get it. Like,
how was he though? As a...
I only read the articles about it. I never saw any bits of it. And it must have been like hosted by or sponsored by TD Canada Trust because they were all those gigantic green leather chairs that you see at the beginning of jazz festival concerts.
Hilarious. And which is ours in Vancouver, which is the biggest sponsor is TD Canada Trust. But yeah, yes. Hilarious.
But yes, I read some articles about it, but not much more than that. And I know on our friend Derek's Facebook, he was talking about he wished he could be in Toronto for like war criminals or whatever. So I'm assuming he must be talking about Bush at least.
I'm hoping. Well, you know, I know that he feels that there may have been some war crimes. I don't want to speak for him, but I wouldn't doubt if his opinion was based on if Clinton was at all involved in a criminal activity, it would be for the Kosovo bombings.
Right.
A lot of people who have any beef against Clinton, that was it, I think. Mm. But I'm sure it's more Bush than right. anything.
But there's that going on in the world. There is the new Supreme Court Justice nominee, and I've been reading a lot about her, which yeah. is quite interesting. Sonia Sotomayor, I guess mm-hmm. is how you say her name. Yeah, fascinating, and I just love yeah. The whole debate about what the Republicans' reaction is going to be to that. So it's quite...
Calling her yeah. a racist. Come on, guys. Jeez.
Anyway. But you know, there's all those things happening in the world, of course. But more importantly, we've been saving our election, BC election, British Columbia election, which is our province here in Canada, who just had provincial elections not more than... Less than a month ago, a couple of weeks ago, actually, it was.
Yeah.
And we've been saving that. We wanted to podcast, do a post-election podcast. So what are your thoughts on the election?
You know, I wasn't really surprised. I knew that Liberals would win. That was my thought anyway. Like, I had a feeling it was a good chance, even though this was their third time, and it's kind of rare to have three in a row. He's like the third or fourth guy to do that.
Yes, third consecutive majority government. So in the parliamentary system, of course, but yeah.
So I wasn't surprised by that. I was surprised at the voter turnout, but again, not because it was literally the day after the Canucks got out of the playoffs. So I was really kind of disappointed because one, you have, and I know we'll talk about this, you have the STV referendum, single yes. transferable vote. And you're choosing your governing party. But with all that in mind, it's like, wow, we don't get concerned, especially in the springtime. People are calling for elections, these things, to be in the fall, because for some reason we'd be more focused then, I guess. But, you know, kids going to school and all that, maybe. But I thought, you know, it wasn't a big surprise. I was kind of surprised at... how close it was in the popular vote, like there's 4% difference or something between them and the NDP.
Right, and remind me, the voter turnout was low, or was it historically low?
It was the lowest ever for BC, okay. Yeah. Okay. We'll definitely send some literature out about that. And you know, I think it's... I'm always kind of torn because, you know, I'm not one of those BC Liberal bashers in the sense that everything they do sucks. I think they've done some really questionable things, and I think they've done some downright dirty things, but I think they've also been pretty progressive on some things, like the environment, carbon tax. I've always been for the carbon tax, so it's good to see that not go away. I think overall the NDP were pretty disorganized, and although I like Carol James in general, I just don't think their party was ready. And the Greens was kind of like a footnote. But I just wish it was more voter turnout, and I wish more people had voted on the STV thing or maybe read up a bit more about it. It's not an easy concept initially. And I think, you know, we had this referendum 4 years ago. We've had a lot of time, or 5 years ago, whatever. We had a lot of time to educate ourselves on different, like, electoral reform or whatever. So
right.
Those are my overall thoughts. What about you?
Well, there's a couple of things. I'll start with the STV. Again, it's BC STV, so it's a single transferable vote, which is the new system that if we all voted for it to a certain supermajority, whatever, you know, there's a whole bunch of calculations of what exactly defines a supermajority vote. But if we voted for this new system, then we would have totally revamped our electoral system, and the next provincial election would have been a much different ballot, a much different way, and including some proportional representation. So that's for the people who don't really have a sense of what that is. And yeah, I mean, for one thing, like, it was really sad because, you know, going into this provincial election, when one, the economy is a real concern, but two, given that the system, the last time they voted and it got a majority, but not a supermajority, for this new system, that was a time when NDP only had 2 seats in the legislature. So, you know, there was a visualization of how the system was broken in the real sense. But then going into this election, the NDP was much stronger. They had, like, whatever number of seats they had.
Yeah.
So people would say, well, you know, in general, there was a sense that the system wasn't in crisis because there was at least an opposition of some kind, right?
Which I don't disagree
with. Which I don't disagree with either in terms of... of perception.
Yeah.
But I hated the whole idea of complicated, you know? And I think when some guy said it on the radio, he said, well, you know, brain surgery is kind of complicated, but we still do it, don't we? You know, you know, and things by like that, means. Right? You know, and like, I mean, there's some simplistic things like that, which like really pissed me off, or, but there's a point of something about how, whether or not STV was going to be, was a racist system. So I hadn't really? Heard that. It was in one of those, you know, daily newspapers that you get free. And then people were, that's weird because they said, and I don't even know all about it, but they, but that was one thing that came out as well, was whether or not it was a racist system, and whether or not it was fair to even quantify or qualify it as that, right, or even describe it as a racist system. But irrespective of that, like, I, and, you know, we talked about this before the podcast and before the vote, and I voted for it the last time, I voted for it again this time, and I just, the whole idea was that, you know, it's not a perfect system, or it's not, you know, it's not, it's not ideal, but, you know, our current system is not ideal, and there's a and there's a great article, I think I forwarded you the link, from Andrew Coyne, who's one of the big famous political pundits in Canada.
Yeah.
And he actually was for it, and he laid out a lot of different really legitimate, interesting reasons.
Yeah.
Not so much why STV was better, but why First Past the Post sucks. and I think that's really what you have to think about, is that the current system isn't designed for actually representing individuals.
Right.
And if you wait for the golden egg, which is my point has always been, if you wait for the golden egg, you'll never find it.
Absolutely.
And you have a system, democracy has to evolve. It's a great experiment in the modern world of how we live as groups of people in one place. That you know, to make the current system this sort of, you know, untouchable until you find the really, really ultimate best is dangerous. You know, it's totally dangerous. We should feel free to change the system, try it out.
Especially since we have the opportunity.
We have the opportunity. And just people who just didn't think about it long. And I'm usually not this harsh about things, right? But like,
exactly.
But like, I was
Justin, he's harsh right now.
Yeah, I know. This is not sounding harsh either. But I really do, like, I don't typically say that people were stupid or people didn't think enough about when they decided, when they did an action or vote or whatever. Yeah. But I truly believe at this time, like, people just, if they thought about it for more than it's too complicated, like, you know, I think people would have actually voted for it. So I got frustrated about that. And I got frustrated also because it's a system, if it was voted in, would have solve the problem that I had in my particular riding, which is Vancouver Point Grey.
Yeah, yeah.
As we who live in the riding know, Gordon Campbell, who is the premier, is my MLA. And, you know, I really actually don't really have much of an opinion for or against him as an individual.
Yeah.
And yes, he's did the drunk driving thing, which is kind of really stupid, and it's amazing how he's still premier because after being convicted of that, right? So, you know, I mean, that aside, irrespective if it was any premier, right, good or bad, a premier of the province cannot represent his constituency properly.
Yeah.
If he's busy worrying about the budget and the environment and carbon taxes and whatever, he's not going to worry about what's going on in his constituency. Mm-hmm. Or he just, not that he doesn't want to, just there is no time.
Yeah, like, totally.
You know, Barack Obama is the president of the United States, but he's also not a senator for Illinois. You are the president. You are the president, right? Or you're the prime minister, which is sucks, which is weird, because you have to also be the what's I guess Stephen Harper's an MP in Calgary something, right? You know, like,
yeah, that's right.
You know, I can't imagine, you cannot lead your country and represent your local constituent at the same time. It's physically impossible. That's like funny. It just is,
unless you get like some daily brief and you're like, okay, great, someone take care of that.
Yeah. You know, and so, and in my riding, the NDP candidate, and again, irrespective of NDP policies or whatever, I'm talking straight individual people. That guy, Mel Lehan, should really be our MLA. He is a local community activist, done so many good things, brought the farmers market to the community, is the leader behind, and the visionary behind the St. James Community Square.
Yep.
Like, just a lot of...
He I've heard him being referred to as the mayor of Kitsilano.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much. I mean, that's a pretty apt description. And yeah. And I've only been there for like, you know, 4 or 5 years, and I can just, you could easily to tell that he is the heart and soul of what was Kitsilano and what should be Kitsilano again in terms of that community mindedness, activism, you know, fighting for the more vulnerable populations, whether or not it's in Kitsilano or not.
Right.
He would be a great MLA. I'd be proud, irrespective if I was a liberal, BC liberal card holder or an NDP card holder. That guy should be our MLA.
Yeah.
And the way the system works, you just can't have it. You know, like, it just really
sucks. It's too bad, because I know he came close the last time around. I wasn't sure how close it was. Was it?
He still came pretty close. I mean, like, 3,000 votes, which
that's pretty close.
Given that you're against the premier of the province, that's pretty damn close.
Yeah. And, you know, with the STV, excuse me, I keep thinking SCTV, John Candy and Rick Moranis. It's just, I can't say STV. Anyway, one more thing about that is, and directly related to what you brought up about this, which I brought up, which was also this complicatedness.
Yeah.
That, I agree with everything you said on that, and I know that you and I both know that shortly before the election, I was skeptical.
Yes.
I'll admit it. I was skeptical, but there's a couple problems.
Yeah.
One is, when you get the STV official brochure.
Yes.
Oh. It's biased. It's poorly written.
It's
not fairly written.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
You know, these guys, this group of people that came up with this in our lower mainland, wherever they did it, give themselves a huge pat on the back for coming up with this idea or whatever, however they say it came together. That's fine. But the way that they're not educating people in a very, objective way, which is so key. It was so hard. Like, you forwarded me that Andrew Coyne article. I actually had it in my McLean's a few days later.
Oh, okay.
So I read it, and I read letter responses, some pro and some against.
Right, of course. Yep.
Some real knobs. Against it, and some people pro, which sometimes even didn't even understand why they were pro. But about this complicated issue-ness, you know, and I say that in a sense that I had a big discussion about it with a friend right before the election, and I said, you know, they're like, you know, people should just vote for it and understand it. And I'm like, yeah, but we can barely keep our focus on one thing for 1 minute, you know.
Yeah.
I can't expect, unfortunately, and it's very sad, I can't expect the average person in this province or any province to sit down, spend the amount of time it requires to figure out what it is. I mean, we're talking about turning 85 ridings into 20, talking about multiple, possibly up to as many as like 5 different MLAs in one riding.
Yeah.
And that's something totally different. And I think people just don't want to spend the time investigating. And I saw this thing on, don't ask me why I was watching this.
Yeah.
But I signed up to the 99.3 The Fox Club because I was trying to enter into some concert free tickets or whatever. So now I get their email all the time. But anyway, they had some video. So I clicked on one of the videos because just before the election, they were interviewing. There's a video of the radio interview.
Yeah.
This guy on the Fox, Jeff O'Neill or whatever, interviewing the bass player from Nirvana,
okay,
Chris Novoselic, who's down in the state and who lives in Washington State,
okay,
always has, and he's very involved in election reform down there.
Yeah.
Anyway, he came up here to promote it and to educate people because he was for it. Anyway.
Yeah.
So the guy, the radio host of the Fox himself, said, okay, man, you got to explain this to me because I've had 6 different people come in here and try to explain this thing to me and I still don't get it. So that right there, the guy who's in media, like he's a recognized voice to at least a certain part of the population.
Yeah.
And he can't figure it out, you know,
right.
And, or is not spending enough time to or whatever the case.
Right.
But then I listen to Bill Good on CKNW and a guy phones in and says, hey man, you know, we gotta get this stuff, like this stuff out there, this literature, so we can understand this, you know. And Bill Good's like, well, wait a second, I've done 4 shows on it already in the last couple weeks.
Right.
He's like, it should be on top 40 radio and stuff. And Bill Good's like, dude, you have the internet? And he just lists all these things where you can find information. He's like, it's not going to be force-fed to. You got to use the resources involved. And so that goes back to what you're saying, which is we have such an opportunity to change things or try things a different way.
Yeah.
How many times has that happened across the planet? It's rare.
Rare.
It's occasional at best.
Yeah.
And we take it for granted here. And that's, to me, the real tragedy of this last election. Not that it was... I would have rather have seen it was tight, like 49-51, and still lost. I would have been way more happy.
Yeah, it was smacked up.
Yeah, I know.
It was...
We'd watch it, you know? Yeah. I watched it streaming live, and they're like, oh, yeah. They immediately, they're like, oh, yeah, it's taking a nosedive. Like,
it's gone, yeah.
Anyway.
But the only bright light about around electoral or electoral legitimacy was the whole, I mean, just to change topics, but still finishing up this election conversation, was the whole Wally Opal, Vicky Hutchins, Huntington, I guess is her last name.
That's right.
In Delta South, which is a riding that lots of problems in terms of the government and what they've done in terms of power lines in residential areas and something about homes in Sawasin trying to be purchased off just off the power lines so they could actually put power lines through a residential. They're like, power lines through a residential neighborhood. Wow.
I know.
But anyway, so lots of issues around that. And there's Wally Opal, Liberal cabinet minister, attorney general, going into that riding where he lives. I think, you know, you should always run where you live, I think.
Absolutely. Yep.
Or at least where you have the best, you know, understanding, right? So whether or not you live there or work there, whatever it is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so he took away, you know, I think that's the right decision. And whether or not it's the premier who made the decision or Wally himself is dangerous, you know? It's totally dangerous. We should feel free to change the system, try it out.
Especially since we have the opportunity.
We have the opportunity. And just people who just didn't think about it long, and I'm usually not this harsh about things, right? But like,
exactly.
But like, I was
Justin, he's harsh right now.
Yeah, I know. This is not sounding harsh either. But I really do, like, I don't typically say that people were stupid or people didn't think enough about what they decided when they did an action or vote or whatever.
Yeah.
But I truly believe at this time, like, people just, if they thought about it for more than it's too complicated, like, you know, I think people would have actually voted for it. So I got frustrated about that. And I got frustrated also because it's a system, if it was voted in, would have solved the problem that I had in my particular riding, which is Vancouver Point Grey.
Yeah, yeah.
As we who live in the riding know, Gordon Campbell, who is the premier, is my MLA. And, you know, I really have much of an opinion for or against him as an individual. And yes, he's did the drunk driving thing, which is kind of really stupid. And it's amazing how he's still premier because after being convicted of that, right? So, you know, I mean, that aside, irrespective if it was any premier, right, good or bad, a premier of the province cannot represent his constituency properly.
Yeah.
If he's busy worrying about the budget and the environment and carbon taxes and whatever, not going to worry about what's going on in his constituency. Mm-hmm. Or not that he doesn't want to, just there is no time.
Yeah, like, totally.
You know, Barack Obama is the president of the United States, but he's also not a senator for Illinois. You are the president, right? Or you're the prime minister, which is sucks, which is weird, because you have to also be Stephen Harper's an MP in Calgary something, right? You know, like,
yeah, that's right.
You know, I can't imagine, you cannot lead your country and represent your local constituent at the same time. It's physically impossible. It just is.
Unless you get like some daily brief and you're like, okay, great. Yeah. Someone take care of that.
Yeah. You know, and so, and in my riding, the NDP candidate, and again, irrespective of NDP policies or whatever, I'm talking straight individual people. Mm-hmm. That guy, Mel Lehan, should really be our MLA. He is a local community activist, done so many good things, brought the farmers market to the community, is the leader behind and the visionary behind the St. James Community Square.
Yep.
Like, just a lot of...
I've heard him being referred to as the mayor of Kitsilano.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much, that's a pretty apt description. And I've only been there for like, you know, 4 or 5 years, and you could easily tell that he is the heart and soul of what what was Kitsilano and what should be Kitsilano again in terms of that community mindedness, activism, you know, fighting for the more vulnerable populations, whether or not it's in Kitsilano or not.
Right.
He would be a great MLA. I'd be proud, irrespective if I was a liberal, BC liberal card holder or an NDP card holder. That guy should be our MLA.
Yeah.
And the way the system works, you just can't have it. You know, like, it just really
sucks. It's too bad, because I know he came close the last time around. I wasn't sure how close it was.
He still came pretty close. I mean, like, 3,000 votes, which
that's pretty close.
Given that you're against the premier of the province, that's pretty damn close.
Yeah. And, you know, with the STV, excuse me, I keep thinking SCTV, John Candy and Rick Moranis. It's just, I can't say STV. Anyway, one more thing about that is, and directly related to what you brought up about this, which I brought up, which was also this complicatedness.
Yeah.
That, I agree with everything you said on that, and I know that you and I both know that shortly before the election, I was skeptical.
Yes.
I'll admit it. I was skeptical, but there's a couple problems.
Yeah.
One is, when you get the STV official brochure.
Yes.
Oh. It's biased. It's poorly written.
It's
not fairly written.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
These guys, this group of people that came up with this in our lower mainland, wherever they did it, give themselves a huge pat on the back for coming up with this idea or whatever, however they say it came together. That's fine. But the way that they're not educating people in a very, objective way, which is so key. It was so hard. Like, you forwarded me that Andrew Coyne article. I actually had it in my McLean's a few days later.
Oh, okay.
So I read it, and I read letter responses, some pro and some against.
Right, of course. Yep.
Some real knobs. Against it, and some people pro, which sometimes even didn't even understand why they were pro. But about this complicated issue-ness, you know, and I say that in a sense that I had a big discussion about it with a friend right before the election, and I said, you know, they're like, you know, people should just vote for it and understand it. And I'm like, yeah, but we can barely keep our focus on one thing for 1 minute, I can't expect, unfortunately, and it's very sad, I can't expect the average person in this province or any province to sit down, spend the amount of time it requires to figure out what it is. I mean, we're talking about turning 85 ridings into 20, talking about multiple, possibly up to as many as like 5 different MLAs in one riding.
Yeah.
And that's something totally different. And I think people just don't want to spend the time to investigate it. And I saw this thing on, don't ask me why I was watching this.
Yeah.
But I signed up to the 99.3 The Fox Club because I was trying to enter into some concert free tickets or whatever. So now I get their email all the time. But anyway, they had some video. So I clicked on one of the videos because just before the election, they were interviewing. There's a video of the radio interview.
Yeah.
This guy on the Fox, Jeff O'Neill or whatever, interviewing the bass player from Nirvana,
okay,
Chris Novoselic, who's down in the state and who lives in Washington State,
okay,
always has, and he's very involved in election reform down there.
Yeah.
Anyway, he came up here to promote it and to educate people because he was for it. Anyway.
Yeah.
So the guy, the radio host of the Fox himself, said, okay, man, you got to explain this to me because I've had 6 different people come in here and try to explain this thing to me and I still don't get it. So that
the
guy who's in media, like he's a recognized voice to at least a certain part of the population.
Yeah.
And he can't figure it out, you know,
or
is not spending enough time to or whatever the case.
Right.
But then I listen to Bill Good on CKNW and a guy phones in and says, hey man, we really got to, we got to get this stuff, like this stuff out there, this literature, so we can understand this, you know? And Bill Good's like, well, wait a second. I've done 4 shows on it already in the last couple of weeks.
Right.
He's like, it should be on top 40 radio and stuff. And Bill Good's like, dude, you have the internet? And he just lists all these things where you can find information. He's like, it's not going to be force fed to, you got to use the resources involved. And so that goes back to what you're saying. which is we have such an opportunity to change things or try things a different way.
Yeah.
How many times has that happened across the planet? It's rare.
Rare.
It's occasional at best.
Yeah.
And we take it for granted here. And that's, to me, the real tragedy of this last election. Not that it was... I would have rather have seen it was tight, like 49-51,
yeah.
And still lost. I would have been way more happy.
Yeah, it was smacked up.
Yeah, I know.
It was...
We'd watch it, you know? Yeah. I watched it streaming live, and they're like, oh, yeah. They immediately, they're like, oh, yeah, it's taking a nosedive. Like,
it's gone, yeah.
Anyway.
But the only bright light about around electoral... legitimacy,
yeah,
was the whole, I mean, just to change the topics, but still finishing up this election conversation, was the whole Wally Opal, Vicky Hutchins, Huntington, I guess is her last name.
That's right.
In Delta South, which is a riding that lots of problems in terms of the government and what they've done in terms of power lines in residential areas and something about homes in Sawasin trying to be purchased off just off the power lines so they could actually put power lines through a residential. They're like, power lines through a residential neighborhood. Wow.
I know.
But anyway, so lots of issues around that. And there's Wally Opal, Liberal cabinet minister, attorney general, going into that riding where he lives. I think, you know, you should always run where you live, I think.
Absolutely.
Yep. Or at least where you have the best, you know, understanding, right? So whether or not you live there or work there, whatever it is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so he took away, you know, I think that's the right decision. And whether or not it's the premier who made the decision or Wally himself, he's in Delta South in tough against an independent candidate, which never happens.
Oh, I didn't know she was independent.
Vicky Huntington is an independent candidate.
Awesome.
Not an NDP candidate, independent. Right. But a city councilor, a very popular one from my understanding in that area.
Oh.
And so she lost by 14 votes. And then they did the recount, or the counting of all the absentee ballots and everything, and she came out on top by 23 or 32 votes or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So now there's a judicial recount, right? And
because you have
to do it. I mean, yeah. It's 32 votes. But, I mean, if it holds, that, you know, at least says something about the power. I don't think it says anything much about the system. The system still sucks in terms of first past the post, but it provides some ray of hope that we are not beholden to political parties, you know?
Mm.
Like, and that in the end, irrespective of the fact that in our system, the party who gets the most seats, their leader gets to be premier.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I wonder about the validity of that.
Mm.
You know, the fact that she can garner enough support and enough, you know, credibility given just her years of service, from my understanding. That's a pretty powerful thing.
Yeah.
That it's about the person. Like, in the end, you have to have someone who you can trust, who you can actually want to vote for. I mean, if people are going to vote for an independent, people are voting because they think she is the best candidate.
Yeah.
Not vote for the independent because, well, she's the lesser of two evils.
That's right.
No, you vote for the lesser of two evils because you have to vote for a party, right?
That's right.
So that's not an argument with an independent. So I think that was fascinating. I mean, I don't
that
know.
Is.
I have no idea what it means and what, you know, what precedent it means, but I just know it's a big deal.
So know? Does he not, so if this judicial recount goes through and he's for sure gone, does
yeah.
that mean he's not Attorney General anymore?
Yeah, he can't be Attorney General.
So
yeah.
How do they choose the next
Attorney General?
Yeah.
Gordon Campbell will choose from whoever was elected to be as
so
the,
it's appointed.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Because all the cabinet positions are appointed by the premier.
Oh, and that's one of those.
And it's always from the elected MLAs. Yeah, because I mean, Attorney General. I mean, you know how there's Minister of Health, Minister, and
yeah.
those are all appointed, you know, from the elected. Attorney Generals is the exact same level as those.
Oh.
There's just no Minister of whatever. It's because Attorney General is like. Well, I think there's a federal attorney general, isn't there?
Yeah.
I think, yeah. But it's sort of like, you know, the justice minister kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, provincially is my, you know.
Yeah, it's a good way of saying it, yeah. Well, that's really interesting.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. Shall we move on to a new topic?
Yeah, I thought, well, it's a good way to go into a different kind of justice.
Okay.
Camby. And Susan Hayes. And Hazel and Company. You know, let me just say, I was on the fence on this issue way back. like way back. I'm talking when the construction started. So this is about the cut and cover construction on Canby Street. Where the RAV line is going to be underground.
And that's the new rapid transit line from downtown Vancouver to Richmond and to the airport, going down, like you said, Canby Street. The original intention was that it was going to go...
Like a tunnel.
So they would sort of dig a tunnel so nothing above on the surface would be disrupted.
But $400 million more.
Yes, something like that. But do a cut and cover thing, which is basically you disrupt everything along the line. You dig it up from the surface, and then you put in your transit, and then you cover it up again, right? So anyway, so that's the whole. And of course, Canby Street has a lot of businesses, lots of residential,
lots of trees,
a lot of trees all along that line. So yes, so keep on, Sean.
Well, I think you know, Elaine and I have had discussions about it, and when this lawsuit was pending, like way back. Or in progress or whatever, I thought, you know, would this set a precedent, you know, if she won? And, you know, anytime...
Damn straight.
Oh, okay, well, you know...
Keep going.
But then I thought, is there a difference between road work and this extremely unique, unprecedented situation that was on Canby?
Right.
Which I think it is.
Yeah?
I think there has never been, and someone... you know, write in to us or give us a shout if you hear otherwise, if you know of otherwise. But I don't think there's been any type of construction at this level before in the Lower Mainland or Vancouver, let's say. And I think that, business, you know, hey, the proof is right there. Businesses have left where they were previously successful in business on the drive. On Canby. I'm sorry, I live on the drive. Anyway, but, and knowing how much money she lost, and she probably has the accounting to approve it, I think I was happy to see her win, and I know that others have followed, and there's another class action suit pending. I think she was just the trailblazer in this case, but,
yep.
I hate to say it, but I think part of the controversy... is involved because she's a woman.
Really?
Interesting. I don't like saying that. I hate saying that or thinking it.
That never came into my mind.
But I think there are people out there who'd be like, you know, that's kind of bitchy.
Really?
And I think it's awful. And if this makes me look bad by saying it, I'm sorry, but it was a natural instinct to think that. And
wow.
I think she had every right to wage this lawsuit, and I'm glad she won. And, of course, for none of those reasons. But I think she won for the right reason, which was because she was robbed. And I can't help but think there was, what do you call that, misogynist attitude or whatever, probably involved?
Yeah,
Is that
no,
the word?
It's,
what is the word? It's sexist or whatever.
Yeah, I forget.
It's not in a large way, but I can't help but think there's a little underlying... thought there on the other side.
Interesting. That never was on my radar until you just said it just now.
Like, I hope I'm wrong. I hope that doesn't exist in anyone's mind on the people that she was fighting this for. But, hey.
That's interesting. Well, it's funny because my thoughts on this have been quite interesting. I've, for one... You're right. I think there's a precedent on a certain thing, not so much a legal precedent, but that a precedent that, like, people who are going to be undergoing these kinds of work in the future, these huge infrastructure projects, has to do a lot more work than just get it done. And understanding that their activities, although they'll save $400 million, you may lose $400 million just through compensation of various businesses, right? Like, you know,
at least millions,
you know,
like tens of millions,
exactly. And so there's some sort of much better process you should put in place when you think about these large infrastructure projects. I think you're right. I mean, it's not going to set a precedent around things like, you know, if someone's getting if they're repaving a street,
that's what
you
know,
regular repaving,
that's right.
or sidewalk renewal, or you know, they're readjusting a bus line in a certain way and they have to repaint the lines or something, like all that sort of regular maintenance. I don't think it's going to be an issue, But precedence, what it will impact is the planning towards the Millennium Line extension along West Broadway.
You know, that's that, right. Like that's, which will happen, right? But it's inevitable, right?
Well, yeah, maybe 50 years from now. But, you know, like, it better happen is what I have to say. Like, yeah.
It's in a conceptual stage, isn't it?
Yeah, they're doing some feasibility studies on it or something. But anyways, so that's the impact. I used to complain. Like, my thought was, businesses, you know, you should just plan better. You know, like, you know, if you know this is good, disruption in service is going to take place, you should not buy that giant new, you know, industrial kitchen for your restaurant. Or you shouldn't buy you shouldn't take a gamble on a whole new product line of dresses that you don't know will sell. Right? And you spend the money on that inventory. Or, you know, maybe use the opportunity to bulk up your online store or something, right? So it's not foot traffic, right? All these different things you can do. I think those points are still valid for, like, the West Broadway stuff, or the Broadway corridor one, because we're talking 10, 15 years down the line. You should start thinking now, you know, like, what can you do, you know, to stay alive, right? Squirrel away your revenues, whatever, that sort of thing. But to a degree, right? And I used to think about that for the Cambie situation too, but the Cambie one came faster. Like, it literally came, like, the Olympics were, you didn't know whether you're going to get the Olympics, so why would you plan, you know? And then that's suddenly, right. The Olympics right. got here, and suddenly the RAV line became, and suddenly it was supposed to be, although the tunneling, and suddenly became cut and cover. So there wasn't a lot of time for people to start stockpiling revenues or income and make those adjustments, right? So there was some time, but not a lot, right? So that, I think, is in the favor of the woman, Susan, who was running Hazel & Co., who did the lawsuit. But what I thought was the most important part of the judgment was that the judge agreed that, you know, yes, businesses should be, you know, understanding that, you know, you're going to take a hit on these kinds of circumstances, or these things might come up.
Yeah.
But only to a certain amount. There's only so much anyone can do.
Absolutely.
To... You know, even if you have full information and you knew cut and cover is going to happen the whole entire time, that you can do to plan. And that's what the judgment says, at least from what I've read in the articles that I've read about it, is that the judge said what TransLink and all the people involved said you should just buck up and deal with was far greater than what any average person could do, or any educated person or business savvy person could really realistically do and accommodate for.
Absolutely.
So irrespective of all those arguments, if the impact is just still so much greater than what anyone could do, you have to compensate them. And I think that is right, and that is just. And so I think that was the right judgment, at least from what I've read in the report. So I thought that was really interesting. And so that's the angle I came at it.
And that's I think that makes sense. I'm glad you brought that up, because I read some of the judgment, I guess the big parts of it, and it's one of the better judgments I've seen really on anything in recent memory. You know, usually it's a judge letting off a killer, you know, because he feels bad for him, you know, like, and all his bogus, erroneous reasons of why he got a light sentence, you know. But anyway, but no, I fully agree, and I think... You're right. There is only so much they could have done. And I'm sure you feel the same way. Like, you wanted to go anywhere east of Cambie. And I wanted to go anywhere west of Cambie.
Oh, God. Yeah.
There's this big thing in your head these last 4 years of Cambie.
Oh, God. I got to cross Cambie. Yeah, it's true.
It's this huge hurdle. It's an impression. It's a mind, state of mind. You can't tell me that, you know, they were just going to be, like, sitting back, like, oh, yeah, people will come, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I was a little surprised, because I thought people who lived in those areas who could walk there, I thought would help carry them through, but I don't know if that's the case.
And how much clothes can one person buy, or when, you know, and how many times can someone go out for dinner, you know? Like, they got to also figure out how they're going to survive themselves, right?
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I thought that was really fascinating, and I was talking to my sister about this, and we were talking a little bit about the verdict, and she said, you know, but, you know, there's, and one of the arguments that I thought, too, was that, you know, but in the end, if you can just stick it out, then you're going to have a great location, because you're going to be accessible by bus, by car, and by rapid transit. Like, you know, it's gonna have much more, it's gonna be much more livelier place.
And I think that was part of their angle, right?
Yes. And but then I'm like, but all the added revenues you'll get. And I thought, well, I thought that angle was actually right. I'm like, well, that's a good point. But then when I having more discussion with my sister, it was more like, oh wait, but that angle doesn't really hold water, because if you end up being in a more desirable area and you start getting more revenues for the short term, your income will be great. And then suddenly, once your rent check, your rent agreement comes up for renewal, your rent's going to go up like crazy. So anything, any income that you have gotten just because of the bigger flow of traffic and more customers, gets eaten up by increased rent, because now it's a more desirable area.
Right? And it doesn't last.
And it doesn't last.
Which is the other side of where it doesn't hold water, because if it wasn't cut and cover and they just tunneled, they would have had the same business, I guess. And, you know, they would have maybe got even more business when Ravline started, but that only lasts for so long. Every new thing only lasts for so long.
If people are going to, they're going to take that and they'll get off, whatever. But then most of the time, people just sort of get off where they need to get off, because they need to, that's where they live, right? Like, I'm probably going to, you know, when it opens, you know, the first couple of months, just take the Ravline, get off at every stop, look around,
I'm doing it. I can't wait till, like, I've always been for, see, that's the thing. I've always been for the Ravline.
Like, I have too.
Every step of the way, regardless of the Olympics or any other reason why it's there. And it wasn't officially because of the Olympics. I'll remember this day, Chrétien being like, oh, it's not because of the Olympics. It's if we decide to fund... Sorry, I shouldn't do that. That's really so offensive. Sorry, that was an impression of Chrétien not making fun of French people in general. Sorry. In Quebec, rather. He was saying, you know, like... If we decide to help fund this, it's not because it's not tied to the Olympics. This was going to happen anyway, or whatever. It's like,
yeah, I mean, yes, that's true. It would have happened because you need to connect the rest of Vancouver to itself for one thing. You know, you know me. I always say everyone talks about, oh, it's Richmond, but no one takes buses and transit in Richmond. But yeah, but it cuts all the way through. It actually links Vancouver to Vancouver. Oh my God! That's true. Like, don't forget about that, people, right? So yes, that had to happen. But the Olympics made it happen now than 10 years from now, right? You know what I mean? So, like, that's like a half-truth, right?
Well, let's talk about, like, on a smaller scale, another type of controversy, and that's the Burrard Street Bridge bike lane trial. What's your opinion in general? I think I knew it before, because I think we've talked about this in the past.
It's funny because, and the context was a number of years ago when Larry Campbell and COPE, the Coalition of Progressive Electorates, was running City Hall in Vancouver. They were going to close off lanes of the Burrard Bridge for bike lanes.
Yeah,
and that was a huge actually issue in the election that followed when that came up, because Sam Sullivan and the Non-Protestant Association said, that's crazy. The Burrard Bridge works fine as it is. You're going to ruin it, and we're going to shut that plan down. And of course, Jim Green and Vision Vancouver at the time said, we're for it. And then, of course, everyone was freaked out and they didn't want it. And I mean, well, not the only reason, but they voted Sam Sullivan in.
Yeah.
And so he trashed it. Now that Gregor Robertson and Vision is now running City Hall, they've brought it back up again. And I have to admit, at that time I was a car driver. Now I'm a bus taker, so that's changed my view a little bit. But I was definitely of the camp originally of the hell no, the system works fine. Don't, like, just because the bridge is actually one of the smoother bridge going into downtown doesn't mean you can change it. It means it's working well. It's sort of like when someone's taking medications. And you're like, I'm feeling good, I should get off the meds. No, the meds are working.
I know.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
But now I'm actually, and I think, and I'm in favor of it now.
Okay.
I've changed my mind because what happened was, I think there was a lot of misinformation.
Yeah.
In terms of they were going to take one lane on either side for bike lanes.
Yeah.
And, but now they're only, like, this particular plan is only about one bike lane. So one bike lane, one lane, one car lane is going to be used for bikes. So for Arrow, so they're going to do it sort of like the Lionsgate Bridge, where they have the one lane will change directions from traffic.
Mm.
So whatever way traffic is flowing in terms of rush hour, there will always be three lanes of traffic going into downtown on the mornings, and three lanes going out of downtown in the afternoon, and two lanes going reverse, which is fine, because I think that was the problem. You want three lanes going into town and out of town in the appropriate time.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that they were going to actually have two bus lanes, two cycling lanes, two, mm-hmm. and that would have taken two lanes of traffic. That's wrong. I think that's stupid. Like then you'll really severely hinder the car traffic.
Yeah.
But having one lane, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's decent. So I'm in favor of that.
Yeah, I looked at the actual logistics of it, right?
Yeah.
Having the one lane on one side, and then they're going to turn one of the pedestrian lanes into a bike lane on the other side.
Okay.
Like, where there's actually going to be biking on each side, but one of the actual street lanes will be a bike lane.
Right. Okay.
So, before, you know, and I was a kind of an all mix. Like, I was a driver before. But I love riding my bike, especially over the Broad Street Bridge. Every time I ride over the Broad Street Bridge, which I did like only a couple weeks ago, I'm thinking, this is okay. This isn't really that big a deal, riding over it. It's not during rush hour, mind you, which I have never done.
Right.
So I don't know what that's like. But I do know that all it takes is one pedestrian to just turn around and fly into your lane without even time to like ring your bell, and then you've got a problem on your hands, even at the 15 kilometer speed that you're supposed to be going, which isn't really that fast. But on the same end, there's been a lot of cyclists who do a lot of silly things to pedestrians. And I think, you know, part of the problem with the conflict between drivers, pedestrians, and cyclists in this city is that people sometimes consider themselves one of those things only.
Right.
So it puts people in camps. And
that's a good point. It's a good point.
And I think, you know, like I read a lot about it, you know, in West Ender, people rant and rave about, you know, I'm a pedestrian, and this asshole cyclist did this. And it doesn't even matter what one you consider yourself to be. There's always a problem you see. It's like, I think it's a worthwhile trial, because I think we're just going that way. I think in the evolution of time, we're going towards less cars on the road in especially really dense areas.
Yes.
I think one day we'll see downtown being pedestrian and bikes and buses going into downtown, and maybe like small car lanes. You know what I mean? Like small or near, like a few car routes. I think it's going to be all transit, because
And you get it through hover planes? Or hover cars or something? How far into the future is it?
Well, just joking. You know what I mean.
Like, yeah.
I mean, it costs you money to drive into London, and they're thinking of doing the same thing to drive into Manhattan from the other boroughs.
Right.
Things like that. So I think we're just going that way, and I think people need to get over the fact that we need to try things like this, because it's going to get people on bikes more. Now, another thing I agree with drivers, is I understand their concerns too, and I don't think they should be ignored. I think there's a lot of militant cyclists in this city who really actually aren't doing it good for anyone. But I think drivers, what was I going to say about drivers? Oh crap, I just lost my own thought here. I can't remember now. But I just think if everyone just kind of does their best they can, whether you're a pedestrian, cyclist, or driver, I think you'll be okay, you know, and respect drivers right away. When I was in Paris, and I think I've explained this to you or our friend Kev, is that people respected driving there. Like, when it said walk and to cross the street, the cars stopped and the people started walking, you know, or whatever, cyclists went or whatever. And when it was time for the cars to go, people got the hell off the road and let them go. And it was so, like, obeyed. You know what I mean? People obeyed those things. Not like here, man. I think people have a sense of entitlement, pedestrian-wise, cyclist-wise, and drivers. And I think we all kind of need to just calm it down a bit and go with the rules of the road, but yet try to understand the other person's point of view. And I think things like Burrard Street trials won't be a problem. Oh, here's the thing I know about drivers. Sorry.
Okay, yes.
They think that cyclists don't ride in the rain in the winter. Because they don't. Not like they do in the spring and summer. So it's like, it's great to accommodate this, you know, in the hot, you know, summer, spring months.
Right.
But they're not out there like they are. Some of them are. But yeah. Not in droves like they are right now. Right. And I think there's something to be said about that.
That's true.
So that's just something to keep in mind. But that's my take. I think we should do it. I think we should try it and see what happens.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Nice. I think we should end on that note. We are into good 45 minutes. And I look forward to, hopefully we'll get some comments, given that we were quite animated this time. You never know.
I just don't want people to think I'm sexist.
Oh,
I don't like saying that, you know, people, you know, if a woman says or is very vocal about something, that people think she's being bitchy. But I do know, though, that attitude does still exist. And, you know, it's more hidden, maybe, but I think I just hope it's not the case.
Nice. In case you didn't have your foot in your mouth, I'm just kidding. Just joking.
You know, it's so true. You know, we're recorded. It's for infamy. So yes. You know.
Well, anyway. I'll save my tidbits. I had Whistler on my list, but I was going to say that for the next time because I'm planning a trip for Whistler.
Nice.
I'm very excited.
Thinking of buying a property.
Gosh. Well, given how much it costs to rent a place up there, actually we found some pretty good deals.
Oh, good.
Gosh, it'd be great to, like, own a place and then use it, put it into the pool of rentals, you know? That would be great.
That would be awesome.
Okay. But anyways, I figure, you know, you had Paris, I'll have Whistler.
Hey, you had Italy for a month.
That is true. That is true. But
and
that's,
Venice, California.
That's true. But that's all in the past.
Yes,
go to the future.
That's true.
Well, that was good. This is a good one. Yeah. And we covered a lot of ground, and now we get to go on a double date for dinner. I'm very excited.
Yes. Kitsilano, here we come.
Yeah.
Near Neck of Woods there, almost.
Almost.
Pretty much. That's cool. Great. Well, okay. Thanks for listening.
Yes. Don't forget, check us out online at thedotmatrix.com or the iTunes store. Search for us. I guess it's the Dot Matrix. You can search for us. We'll be there. I don't know if we're on the categories yet, but at least I know we're categorized as that boy that I come. Who knows? But otherwise, drop us a line, listen in, and enjoy the next little while, and I guess we'll see you guys next time.
Yeah, sounds good. Take care, bye.